Siren Radio.
Of course it is. Okay, Gabriella, no messing about in any way, shape or form, unlike Project Yellowhammer or any of those sort of scenarios. What is the weather for Lincoln going to be today from your vantage point in Gibraltar?
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, and it will be a fresh, breezy day with sunny intervals.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Gabriella, as somebody who effectively can deal with the adjective, well, practically perfect in every way, would you actually consider upgrading any particular body part in any way, shape or form in order to be stronger, faster, smarter, and, you know, although this is very much in the eye of the beholder, more attractive? Because apparently more than one in four British people would even be willing to tamper with their brain to add new functions to daily life. Any thoughts on that one, Gabriella? Or is it just a case of, look, we've just got round to finding the face of the first known Gibraltarian? You're now talking about upgrading us in all sorts of ways. One in five people in the East Midlands are willing to become test subjects and trial high-tech body upgrades for money.
No way would I trial something on my body. Yeah. Oh, my brain. Even less on my brain.
So exactly.
I think sometimes people are mad. It depends, I guess. Everyone, I guess, has a price.
The price, apparently, two in five, 44% of those surveyed would actually require just £150 or less new technology implanted into their body, with 18 to 34-year-olds being most willing to take the risk.
I don't know. The thing with medicine is that
it can all go wrong.
Find like a wonder drug, and then 20 years later, they realize after prolonged use on humans the effects, the side effects that it has on people. And I know that it goes through testing for years and years, but it is something that happens. You always find something better, and so why would you put yourself in
Well, apparently, if British folk had the option of incorporating cybernetic implants into their body, 92% of the country would be tempted with a technological upgrade to better their abilities. 60% would opt for technology to enhance their eyesight and to heal quickly after injury or illness. Other popular body upgrade functions are perfect memory, increased intelligence, increased physical strength, perfect hearing, and super fast reflexes.
Okay. The eyesight one, don't they already have lasers?
I thought they had spectacles. I'm wearing them now, actually, but so that's
a
different one.
Yeah, like, I have glasses, but I know that you can have, like, your laser eye treatment done, and then you can sort it out.
Or go blind, one of the two things, you know, obviously.
Or go blind, you know.
this different line. Yes, in terms of the brain scenario, 28%, so over a quarter of British folks said they would be willing to tamper with their grey matter and have a microchip installed into their brain to add specific functions to improve their daily lives. And some of these functions, in case you're wondering, Gabrielle, you might like to suggest it to your parents, I don't know, that most desirable use for this theoretical brain chip would be a GPS system to provide directions should you ever get lost. One in five would actually like their chip to contain all their personal data and identification, so they wouldn't need to carry a wallet anymore. And 13% would like their emails and social media updates beamed directly to their minds. Oh, no.
Isn't that, it's like TV, isn't it? Well, they say it's the future, so...
They do,
indeed. I wouldn't be surprised if
The survey was commissioned by Virgin Media, and we have futurologist Dr. Ian Pearson, who's going to be sharing some of his thoughts on this particular area. I don't know. I mean, it's... but then again, you know, if we had, you know, some of our parliamentarians giving brain updates, would they be in the challenges that they're in at present? I don't know. It's just whatever sort of. Let's talk a little bit. let's talk a bit about the face of the first known Gibraltarian. Let's go back in time from that point of view. This forensic reconstruction, which broke in the Gibraltar Chronicle, in fact, just a matter of hours ago, etc. You see, I mean, is this a case of an early bidder for the throne that you obviously occupy, Gabriella, being the official weather forecaster for Lincoln, England, from Gibraltar, in the Med?
Yeah, so we've got Calpia. Yeah. The first, they've nicknamed her the first Gibraltarian woman, so apparently they found bones and and things, and they've made her likeness and what they think.
7,500 years ago. 7,500 years ago.
Yeah.
As when she was doing her stuff and so on. And of course, named Calpurnia because that apparently is a reference to the rock's classical name. So really, it should be Gabriella Peralta from Calpurnia.
Yeah, there's a lot of, if you walk around Gibraltar, there's a lot of things named Calpe. So they've named her Calpe as a female version of it.
Mm.
But yeah, she's
Do you think quite, there
was, I feel like she could actually fit in modern times if you look at her.
Yeah, a few brain implants, you know, a few sort of enhancements would be there.
But she doesn't look too different from what we do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think she could. I think if she was walking down the street,
would she frighten Frodo? Would she frighten Frodo? I mean, that's
the key. Frodo's frightened of everyone whom he first meets. So
the answer is yes. And I think it goes without saying we're not going to sort of even consider the notion of implants for Frodo to actually sort of work. Oh, presumably he is microchipped though.
Frodo did have. He got a nose job.
Oh. Yeah, there we are. So
widened his nostrils. He breathes a lot smoother now.
Yeah.
So he doesn't snore as much at night.
Well, then there we are.
So he's had cosmetic surgery, but actually not really.
Not
cosmetic.
It's after fashion. We can thank Return to Calpurnia, the Minister for Heritage, Dr. John Cortes, for unveiling this fascinating thing. I was just interesting your line there, Gabriella, about saying a lot of things were called Calpe. Was that because they had limited vocabulary 7,500 years ago? They just said, oh, look, Calpe.
No, it's been the in thing. In the past, there's loads of things called Calpe. There's football clubs, there's rowing clubs, there's buildings. So there's a lot of things around Gibraltar called Calpe.
Yeah,
it's just a traditional name, so it seems to, over the years, every time something new gets named
they say Calpe. Calpe,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, obviously, I need to start writing another jingle on ident, which is going to incorporate this historical factor as well. Credits as well to the director of the museum, Professor Clive Finlayson, Dr. Geraldine Finlayson, Stuart Finlayson, I suspect they might be related, and Mr. Jean.
Husband, wife and son team.
Yes, there we are. It's like Gibraltarian family Finlayson all over again, really.
Yeah.
Their entire routine to actually get a 3D printed version of a skull that they actually found in 1996, the last century. Well, never let it be said that on a day in which it's graduation week, you work through that we've ever actually had a scenario or a situation where we have failed to actually go back in time and forward in time with respect to enhancements and so on. So, Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have, thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again next week when, of course, yes, as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned, and I appreciate some of our listeners, they don't know about students. Why should they? But it is Freshers' Week. So,
back on term
time. there we are.
Yeah.
Back on Eastern Standard Time, Pacific Coast Time, Gibraltarian Time, but yes, term time.
Yeah.
Indeed, that's the sort of key
You've
thing.
Got all the young...
whippersnappers.
Yes. Who are going to get party a lot and get sick.
Listen, these days they'll all have implants to actually cope with alcohol, various other bits, so they'll all be bionically enhanced. They'll come in like robots, you know, literally, at least. Maybe not. Anyway, so it goes. Will you return? Will you be back with us in about 7 days from now?
Yes, I will return for Freshers Week.
Way. Such stark despair. Who told course it is. Positive thinking all the way. It is going to be all right, as indeed Carrie Simmons probably said when she headed off to Balmoral to obviously begin the process in which she is actually installed as the rightful Queen of England, and the current incumbent actually will move off to probably look after Scotland or something. Is that outrageous? Is that just quirky and petulant? Oh, maybe not. But maybe it's a case of, do you choose to go and see Hamilton? Do you go and see Downton Abbey? The only person who can actually answer those kind of questions is the awesome Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Well, I have to say, the clash between the preview of Downton Abbey I was offered and Hamilton, I booked, of course, you booked for Hamilton months in advance.
John Robbins was expecting you, clearly.
I have to say, the Victoria Palace Theatre has been done up beautifully, and this is a... of course, it's an international hit that everybody knows now. And, the mix of hip-hop and rhythm and blues and traditional Broadway music, it is amazing. We have, by the way, a cast that's extremely good, including Rachel Ann Gough, who plays Eliza Hamilton, the wife of Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers who the musical is based on, and she was Miss Saigon for a long period, and she's absolutely superb. It's a wonderful cast. It's an extraordinary idea. It's a love letter to the American melting pot, and no question, the audacity of it, much of it dealing with constitutional matters and debates.
Are you suggesting, Richard, that sometimes cultural arts kind of reflects the period of time that they're actually performed in? I cannot believe this. It's just strange.
Well, I have to say this is a superb example because, there's no question. The audacity of this musical, the fact it caught on and, in fact, has become a worldwide hit, is a testament to the fact that they do indeed, and also the fact that so many people could identify with a period of history which was mainly considered to be the preserve of, dead white men, and certainly a period long ago, and suddenly it's dramatically relevant.
I can't see Donald Trump and his family liking it somehow. But
in fact, it's interesting you mention that, because Vice President Mike Pence did attend, and members of the cast, in fact, a member of the cast said that he hoped that Pence enjoyed it, but it was feared by the cast that Donald Trump's administration did not exemplify the values of the American Constitution. This is, of course, Hamilton was partly responsible for drawing it up. This was quite an evening, and Trump was furious. He hasn't seen it, apparently.
Well, you don't want to mess with the ruler of the world and, of course, his friend, the world king that we actually sort of developed. I thought it was wonderful, and I don't ask you to comment on this, but I just slipped in this old notion about Carrie going off to Balmoral. It's really nice, really. I think she's probably going to win her place in the nation's hearts, just as obviously Kate and Meghan have, but there we are.
Meghan has not, which is a thing. In fact, Meghan decided to watch Serena Williams play tennis. Now, this is another... Well, in fact, if we continued with this, probably we'd never get to the films.
No.
But, there is no doubt that there are very unconventional things happening in the royal world. There are extraordinary things happening, as I've just been saying, in the musical world, and Hamilton has added amazingly to the wealth of riches there. And, I have to say I was blown away by the show. There's no question about it. So far as other matters are concerned, what the fates have ordained, I haven't a clue.
It's just as well.
The Scottish courts, as well you know, ruled the suspension of Parliament illegal. As a result, the English courts ruled that it was, so the Supreme Court will adjudicate. And we will see. I always regarded, frankly, the idea of suspending Parliament for an extra 5 weeks with the Brexit deadline, or the deadline...
Order! With the Right Honourable Gentleman for Film Reviews, please take his seat and begin to move on to The Informer, please.
I most certainly will, and indeed, The Informer's... in one way, it's a rather curious film, because we haven't had so many thrillers recently, and I have to say I was looking forward to it a great deal. It's directed by Andrea DiStefano, and Pete Coslow, played by Joel Kinnaman, is a former criminal. He's been in Bale Hill Prison. He didn't enjoy it and doesn't want to go back, needless to say. He's a former special ops soldier, and also he's working undercover for the FBI. And his handlers are trying to arrange him for him to infiltrate the Polish mob's drug trade. Lots of excuses, by the way, here for wonderful extras who really look villainous. My goodness me, some of these, I wouldn't go near them in the dark night. I'd wander on the other side of the road where they dug up these people. It's very funny. But the Polish mob drug trade is a threat to New York. But perversely, when he does infiltrate the mob, he's sent by the head of it back to Bale Hill Prison, where he was interned because of a huge project plan to take drugs to the prisons. The problem, and also, of course, there's the rivalry between the FBI. He has a handler, Montgomery, played by Clive Owen, who has distinguished himself in Night of the Iguana, I have to say, adding a recommendation, we discussed it before, and also his aide, Wilcox, played by the lovely Rosamund Pike, who's a considerable asset to this movie. But there is also the New York Police Department, and he has Grenz, played by Common, as a possible ally. Who knows how the FBI and the New York Police Department operate? They certainly don't operate together. It's an enjoyable enough movie, and there's certainly some excellent scenes in prison. Indeed, those are the most atmospheric, I thought, and visually it's rather good. Clive Owen is rather good as a duplicitous figure, and Rosamund Pike, yes, she does well, or at least I thought she did. I have to say that there's a problem with this movie, or as well as the fact it's quite enjoyable, because if you ask me after I'd left it, if I didn't have a synopsis, who did what to whom and how and where, I'd have a bit of trouble for a lot of it.
Well, then you must see it again, Richard, and see it again and again until you begin to decode the whole thing.
Too many people in this mob mumble, I have to say, and the police do as well, rather than
if it's from the producer of Sicario, you expect a bit of mumbling. If you want an action-adventure movie about things, go and see Guy Ritchie's The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I keep telling you this, but never mind.
Oh, you do indeed, and Sicario, by the way, had a scene, an absolutely unforgettable opening scene, which I think seldom, if ever, been matched in those sort of movies. That really, really about the drug trade with Emily Blunt. I mean, she wasn't, I thought, at her best, but nonetheless, it was a pretty good movie. This isn't as good as that. If you want, well, I would just say, I mean, it's entertaining. Not all the scenes in the prison, certainly climactically, are totally realistic, but nonetheless, it jogs along nicely enough. As I say, it is atmospheric. Visually, some of it's pretty good. There is this problem. I have complained about the mumbling. I said so a couple of seconds ago, but I'll do so again. Yes, easy on the eye. I don't think all of it is totally believable, but the cast are good enough, and indeed a couple of them are very good. You know, you've got Clive Owen and
It lacked as an appetizer for Downton Abbey, I've no doubt. So meanwhile, an intimate and epic journey into the female experience of war, a love letter from a young mother to her daughter, and indeed the story of Wad al-Kadeb's life through 5 years of the uprising in Aleppo. Could we be talking about Forsama?
I can only say this is absolutely extraordinary. If Hamilton blew me away when it came to brilliant staging and lyrics, the very first scene of this documentary, I would mention that it won the prize for best documentary in Cannes. It's absolutely sizingly shocking. Sama is a baby, appears in close-up, and we realize she's actually in a hospital which had been shaken by ferocious explosions. It's a movie where you see what growing up under siege in a war zone, this is either the 6-month siege of East Aleppo, part of Syria's largest city, by the forces of Bashar al-Assad's regime and its Russian allies. You couldn't see it more graphically portrayed. And by graphic, just to give a couple of examples, the horrifying state of a hospital ward after a bombardment, traumatized patients, blood everywhere, dead babies filmed in close-ups when their mothers discover them, massacres of those the regime has regarded as undesirable, and bodies were dumped in the river. But what is new here, what is totally different, at least as far as I am concerned, is the way the camera of Wad al-Kateb, the courageous 26-year-old journalist who is the co-director of this film, records hundreds of corpses in unflinching detail. And if you really want a scene to take away with you, there's a baby, which at first to be is born dead, is revived by doctors. I have never seen anything like that. I mean, it is an amazing film. I mean, we've certainly supped full with horrors at the end of it. No wonder everyone is praising it as being an extraordinary achievement. Because on the one hand, roaming around where possible, I mean, the regime's forces are closing in, you get graphic, as I say, scenes of horror by Wad al-Kateb shooting with a handheld camera. And then you've got her co-director, Edward Watts, shooting scenes from afar, whereby we actually see how Aleppo is being bombed, and we see the helicopters, we see the Russian jets. You've got both the intimate experience of a siege and also the question, do you stay and do you leave, and what happens when you do leave? And you've also got the overall picture, which, I mean, makes it a dramatic experience, because you wonder, since Wad is married to Hamza, the senior doctor in the last hospital to function, the regime, you see, has, of course, been specifically targeting hospitals. They're that sort of regime, and this is a message to her daughter. It's filmed with documentary maker and co-director Edward Watts. The conditions are so perilous. Yes, indeed, we follow the rejoicing in flashback when the uprising, which was synonymous, really, with the start of the Arab Spring, began. Assad's regime, as we all know, resisted. With the help of Russia, it has quite literally, I mean, as I speak, almost the entire country is now controlled by Assad. And those besieged in East Aleppo did have this dilemma, to stay or to leave, and well, what happens? This will keep you horrified and shell-shocked.
Yeah, indeed. Fairly gripping drama in so many ways, looking at the trailer. And again, that sort of, it's not found footage, it's real, it's documentary work. And yeah, perhaps a reflection actually on the underbelly of human nature, Richard. I mean, maybe as we progress through into the third decade of the 21st century, we need to actually be a bit more civilized and acknowledge that human beings are creatures on a journey to develop a whole range of things. We're spiritual beings on a human journey. Be human. Remember that acknowledgement. Anyway, enough of Star Chef. Let's not wax lyrical, because we need to progress. It's 29 minutes past 8 o'clock. And as I'm sure you appreciate, Richard, even Albert Einstein once said that the most persistent of illusions is that time is actually different, that past, present and future are separate entities. So it's all happening simultaneously.
Well, time is certainly different if you see a room like this.
Indeed. Pass on birthday greetings to Ben Lewis, who I met up with
very briefly
yesterday. He obviously has now graduated. He was presented with his awards and so on. And today is his birthday as well. So there we are. Which is probably one of the reasons he's not in the studio. You know, it's okay. We can cope with that, Richard. You know, when our folk go off into the wide world, it's what life's all about. Meanwhile, I think the Snart family, Tessa and Lois and company, will be celebrating Lois's graduation today. So we'll play a special graduation thing for them in a few moments. Meanwhile, Richard, having effortlessly managed to sort of use that dynamic Fitzwilliams and Leftug in force without even any mention of Burgundy or other sort of bits and pieces, which is fine.
There hasn't been any time.
No, exactly.
A really enjoyable weekend.
We've got Hamilton, we've got The Informer, we've got Fusama. Only The Informer kind of didn't manage to get sort of full marks from that point of view, really, which isn't bad. And if they had sorted out the mumbling, it would have been
even
better.
It's not a bad movie. Oh, it's fun. I mean, it is enjoyable. And we've had, as I say, not that number of those sort of thrillers recently. I mean, it's certainly tolerably acted. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, of course, these aren't great roles. And visually, you know, set in contemporary New York, yes. I mean,
exactly.
But not a...
Not a classic.
You know,
not
three
a classic.
Stars out of five. Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
We're not looking at a potential for Downton Abbey or The Joker. One of which I think might just be sort of mentioned next week, but who knows? I'm just looking at
one most certainly will be.
Well, there we are, Richard. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
Yes, I certainly have.
And then I take it we can look forward to connecting with you in a mere 7 days from now, assuming actually we haven't actually had more upsurgencies and revolutionary sort of aspects, and what sort of state the country will actually be in by then, really.
Yes, I was about to make that very point.
Always important to keep the caveat.
Myself. would buy the food for my family. So if all your people starve, then the fault's not in the stars, and it's not in me. I'm sorry, man.
Recent research has suggested that one of the main concerns that people actually have about their parents as they become more chronologically gifted is if they have a bad fall whilst there's no one there to help, with one in five adults saying that this plays on their mind, understandably really, and as we become more experientially enhanced and so on, clearly there are challenges with many people obviously wanting to be concerned about their parents and concerned about the well-being of their parents. Now, to talk about this and indeed the challenges that humanity faces as we continue our journey through life and so on, we're delighted to welcome international dementia expert Professor June Andrews, OBE. Good morning, June. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good. June, it is an unmitigated fact of life that as we become, as I say, more chronologically gifted, as we age, as we work through our whole procedures with respect to that, clearly there are challenges with us. Were you surprised by this report, or is it a case of, well, yeah, that's what we actually have? I mean, we can't just sort of chuck people out or allow them to literally, like the alleged Eskimos would do, just go off for a long walk into the cold.
Ah, yes. Well, I don't think anybody would be surprised, particularly those of us who are not revealing my age, but I've still got a daughter at university and I've got my dad to look after. If you're sandwiched in the middle and you've got a job, you've got a lot of responsibilities, and people do worry about ageing parents. They worry about whether they're looking after themselves properly, and they worry about what they were going to do if there's going to be an accident. And when you read stories in the paper about people who are maybe lying in a place for a while, then it's not surprising that the research shows that lots of people make daily phone calls just to check if people are okay. I mean, obviously it's good to call and have a conversation anyway, but that feeling that if you fail to call, you don't know what's happening, that kind of worry is something that lots of people feel, and of course the research has supported that.
Often used to use the line that parents are very difficult to bring into the world. And it would seem, as I say, in terms of systems within this, I mean, over half of people over 40 in the East Midlands are prone to contact their parents at least once a day to check on them. Can technology help? I mean, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, maybe if we actually have more and more smart homes beginning to be developed, etc., maybe you don't necessarily need to phone up and actually say, are you okay?
Yeah, well, technology is incredibly useful because you can ring up and say, are you okay? And then something happens 5 minutes later that you don't know about. And so having technology that lets you monitor whether or not somebody's okay without them feeling that they're having to report in or tell you all the time where they are, what they're doing, that's really, really helpful. And that's why it's very useful now that we're starting to have these body-worn devices like the one that CPR Guardian has produced, which... it looks just like a watch. You're wearing it like a wristwatch, or if you're pushing off like an Apple Watch. And it's something that does something useful for you, but it also means that your family knows something about where you are. I don't know if you've got Find a Friend on your telephone. I've got that with my daughter, and she knows where I am all the time, and I know where she is. But for an older person, having something like that on your wrist means that if I got halfway through the day and wondered where my dad was, I could check on my smartphone and I could see, oh yeah, he's in the co-op, or he's wandering around the town, or he's in his house. And knowing what his usual behaviour patterns are, then that would let me know whether or not I thought there was a problem. Or if I suddenly looked at it and it looked like he was heading for Edinburgh, I'd think, you know, has he got a new girlfriend, or has he accidentally got on the wrong bus and gone to the wrong place? So the reassurance of knowing that I could find him if I knew where he was is something that technology now offers to people. And I think that's brilliant, because sometimes, sadly, in my life as a dementia expert, and I mentioned this in my book, you find that people go to care homes because the family are afraid that something might happen. And if they've got technology, then what they can do is check whether or not something is happening, so somebody doesn't get put away in case something happens. It means that you can have the reassurance of knowing, with the assistive technology, knowing where the person is. And it's not obtrusive, it's not stigmatising, it's a rather smart watch.
That, of course, opens up the other aspect, which in many ways you might say is the most poignant line that many parents have actually uttered and worked through that. I don't want to be a burden. And, of course, the notion of going into a care home simply to avoid being any trouble, which is not really the right reason to actually go, I wouldn't have thought, really.
Absolutely not. I mean, a nice care home is a reward for a life well spent. And if you've got enough money and it's a lifestyle option, then a care home can be like going to live in a nice hotel. But for many people, a care home is a kind of last resort when it reaches the time when you really need looking after. And being in a care home can be very nice, but it's very expensive. And even if renting this kind of assistive technology seems to have quite a high monthly rate, you might think, oh, that's a lot of money, compared with the amount of money you have to pay to either have someone looking in or have someone go into a care home, that's a relatively economical way of doing it. And also it lets the person stay in their own home, in their own environment, with their own friends. So assistive technology does help parents who don't want to be a burden to be reassuring their family that they are okay, and if something does go wrong, you know, you can do something quite quickly about it, because the gap between an accident and dealing with the accident is quite important. It's sometimes not the fall that's the problem, it's the hours and hours of lying on the floor while someone discovers that you have a problem. So having a button to press that lets you know you're in a tricky situation, if the person's well enough to press the button when it happens, that's another thing that could be reassuring for the family.
And in terms of where people should actually go to find out further details, where would you point them, June?
Well, CPR Guardian has a website at www.cprguardian.com. There's another really good website which is about assistive technology, which is called atdementia.org.uk. But if you Google this sort of thing, you will find information and small videos that will give you an idea of the sorts of things that can be done, and start talking about it as early as possible with your parents. Talk about it now with your own children and say, look, when the time comes, I'd rather you got me one of these things than started to worry about whether or not I need to go in a care home.
Makes perfect sense. Professor June Andrews, OBE, many, many thanks indeed. And we will doubtless speak again about new initiatives and various other bits and pieces as things progress onwards on this journey through life that we're all on. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Journey through life that we're all on. Could almost be the title for another Ian Lennox book. Couldn't it, Ian? How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm still on my journey.
Yes, I would hope
long
so.
Long one it has been.
Exactly. But and, it's important we keep on going, yeah. Remember.
As you know, I pick up these little clips of these things when you ring me up in the morning before I come on.
Yes.
And that was one of the most impressive leads I've heard.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ian. There we are. That's Professor June Andrews, OBE, Scottish, of course, but we don't hold that against her. it's
a very
thought.
Practical lady.
Exactly. Even though, as you may have gathered, I started at the opening piece by suggesting that maybe we could actually have a scenario where, a bit like Eskimos allegedly do, you just when you get to a certain time, you just sort of just wander off. I suppose there's no ice these days because of the greenhouse global
effect. A bit like Captain Oates, eh?
Well, I'll be back soon. Not a wee while. Whatever.
I'm going out now. Maybe sometime.
Oh, dear. Ian, I have to pass on best wishes to you, good sir, from Tessa Snart, who is in Lincoln. She still is actually in Lincoln, but Snart family are celebrating Lois's graduation today. But she has left me with a piece of music, which, of course, is Tessa's top tune, featured regularly. We almost forgot to play it, even though she was in the studio last night. We almost forgot to play her top tune. And it kind of had an interesting response from our Los Angeles correspondent, Phil Leonis. He started off by sort of saying, but then he kind of grew to like it. So I don't know if that's going to influence you. I know she was delighted when I relayed the message that she'd heard or worked through that you did like her choice last week. So that was thumbs up. That was millionaires.
An endorsement.
Yeah, actually, it was 2 weeks ago. It was 2 weeks ago because last week, of course, we were doing something else. Sorry, what was it? I don't know. It's all this. Yeah, no, we were.
You went to some show, I think.
We were at the Burley International Horse Trials, and tomorrow we'll be at the North of England Horticultural Society's Autumn Flower Show. And then next week, of course, it's going to be a Freshers Week. So it's wonderful stuff in all so many ways. Not, as I keep saying, you know, clearly Siren Radio, very much part of the University of Lincoln, but there are people we know who might be listening in various shapes or forms, even at 16 minutes to 9 o'clock in the morning, who might think, I've had enough of students, I don't want to sort of deal with any students. Just step away, just acknowledge it. It's just a thing that's happening. Bit like, you know, things do happen. Are you ready, Ian, to have a listen to Diamonds?
Yes. Thank you.
I don't know what to say anymore. So I'll sing it in a song. When I'm dead, don't bury me. Scatter me back to Arkansas. There's a man packing his things. Greener pastures down the road. No direction in sight. Just the dream of being home. Don't tell. Chance of getting hit by lightning. Let's see diamonds fall from the sky. Let's see diamonds fall from the sky.
Be the soundtrack for the Michael Owen Alan Shearer movie, which I know the world is desperately keen to actually see because they're both such interesting chaps and they like each other so well. Anyway, so it goes. Have you actually sort of decided, Ian, that you thought I can't take that little Michael Owen chap any further? It's to actually sort of say he didn't want to sign for Newcastle in the first place. It's an outrage. But thank heavens Michael Ashley is still in charge, eh? Let's see, you know, I just raised that point, you know, things could go all over the place in that sort of ways. I mean, the city of Lincoln having to come to terms with the notion that the Cowley brothers have actually gone to Huddersfield. I know, I can't understand it either, but still.
I think you could burn an empty house, you.
It's a way forward. Anyway, what did you make of Diamonds, Tessa's tune of this week?
I liked it. I think it's one of those songs it's much better to see performed than to listen to on a video not a record, you know.
Or down a telephone line, you know, across half the country, you know.
And is it from Arkansas, the group?
Yes.
Isn't that part of the Appalachians?
Arkansans, I think so, yes. It's America, I don't know. I mean, you know, just as the Americans don't really know about where we're based in the world. Global generalisations there. Yes, part of the country music scene. And I think it grows on one. It grows on one. Mind you, so does Poison Ivy, but still. Moving on. Ian, are you a wine drinker, perchance?
Not really. I keep drinking some white wine, but very expensive red wine. I can just about gulp that down.
Well, we will be speaking to our wine expert, Philip Carr, in the second part of the programme with a down-to-earth guide to wine. In her own words, good wine is one of life's great pleasures, yet unfortunately for many it has a reputation for being a very complex area to navigate. And she's going to be talking about how to read the label, what does the lingo mean, how to choose, serve and store wine correctly, and how to find great value for money in wine, as opposed to great value money in wine, which clearly you just need a preposition within there. It's very strange. That's a tease ahead. And the other question we need to put to you, Ian, of course, quite apart from the footballing side of things, but 5-3 England, eh? 5-3. Interesting.
Strange.
It's just strange, but at the same time, quite entertaining. Especially the manager of Kosovo, who I think showed the sort of passion that perhaps Gareth Southgate needs to maybe apply. Oh, very annoying, but still.
He visited you before the game, and he seemed a highly intelligent, reasonable chap, and he suddenly became sort of animated, I think. So
indeed. Indeed, it's maybe reflecting the political times in which we're based. But the question we've been putting to people, we started off with Gabriella Peralta earlier this morning, is would you consider enhancing any body parts or becoming a test subject for money, Ian? I mean, apparently nearly 90% of British folk would actually consider actually participating in a test trial for body upgrades ranging from brain implants onwards, really. Would you go with that, or would you say no? I don't think
so. Doubt about that sort of thing, and all my body parts are so old they're not worth anything anyway.
Yeah, but that's the reason you'd go for enhancements, you'd go for updates. You know, it could mean that Ian Lennox could actually have another 120 years to actually go. So, you know, it's the line for
me. No.
That's okay. Well, we can understand that. Anyway, Ian, it seems as though the line unusually between Lincoln and Newcastle seems to be just a wee bit intermittent. Not in a kind of Norman Collier-esque way, but just a wee bit intermittent. So I'll try and ask you those last two questions before we go up to what is the traditional graduation tune we always play on the Midweek Drive or the Midweek Drive Morning Edition this time of year. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Ian Lennox?
Thank you.
Will you be able to come back and join us again next week, Ian, or should we actually phone you on an hourly basis just to check that you're okay?
I shall get the heart monitors set.
Yes.
And I shall be ready.
Yay!
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 99, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubblegum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long. In the end, Tony with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much, or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance. So are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance. Even if you have nowhere to do it but in your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Travel. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You too will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you'll have a wealthy spouse. You never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me, on the sunscreen.
And coming up after the news from the Sky News Centre, child psychologist Elizabeth Kilby will be talking about how parents might sometimes feel they're failing their children. We've got wine expert Philippa Carr, we've got Dr. Sarah Brewer, William Sitwell, and Dr. Ian Pearson. And the weather for Lincoln, highs today of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, a day of sunny intervals with fresh breezes. Now, parents, as we've often said, they're very difficult to bring into the world. But it seems that, according to research from Kinder, that many mums and dads across the country feel that they're bad parents on a daily basis. Well, we need to clearly bring in some professional advice to actually focus on this particular area with respect to parents feeling that they're failing their children. And who better than child psychologist extraordinaire Dr. Elizabeth Kilby. How are you, Elizabeth?
Good morning, I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So this, I mean, the secret life of 4, 5, 6-year-olds, etc., you've got over 15 years experience in terms of the field, etc. Is it just a case of, well, at the end of the day, there is no absolutely one-size-fits-all route planner which can actually map out, this is what you should be doing to actually deal with your children?
Absolutely, and the research showed that parents, although are trying their best, feel very guilty about their parenting and feel that they don't spend enough time with their children, and I'm pretty sure your listeners can relate to that idea. What really encouraged me was 98% of the children we asked, which is pretty much all of them, said that they thought their parents were trying their hardest. That is very encouraging news.
Absolutely. I mean, that was, I think, one of those positive lines about this. But on the flip side of that, of course, is the notion that, you know, this guilt factor that comes through, that parents are not sure whether they're spending their too much time on their screens, or the children are spending too much time on screens, not allowing them to not making them read on a daily basis. Is it also tied in with maybe the competitiveness that we feel as society, that, you know, within the media, we're often sort of guilty of league tables, assessments, league tables, and you're kind of made to feel as though it's better, fitter, faster, stronger, always progressing and so on. Otherwise, you're useless.
I mean, I think you've really sort of gone to the heart of this issue, and I think we live in a society now where there is endless comparison. We have the opportunity to reference our parenting on social media against advice from experts, and I'm sure I'm as guilty of this as the next person.
Oh, but Elizabeth, you give sage advice, you see. This is the difference. I mean, that's why you're on the programme. You know, your advice is worth listening to.
Well, I often say to the parents that I work with, comparison is rarely the route to happiness. And I think that we need to help empower parents to feel a bit more confident in what they're doing, because the message from children is what they really want. It's the small amounts of time that you spend with your children every day. It's not the big things. It's not the big gestures. It's a lot more simple than that.
I was intrigued to find in terms of the gender balance that, I mean, I appreciate we've gone way away, hopefully, in many ways, so from the patriarchal society of our Victorian forebears, etc., where the whole notion of fathers getting involved with parenthood at all, apart from the initial inception, was, well, sorry. But we still have a sort of balance in it. 97% of mothers are more likely to feel like bad parents as opposed to 89% of fathers. Close, really. I mean, and obviously far too high in both instances. But I thought initially that might have been a little bit lower for dads as opposed to mums?
Well, I think that's really encouraging, and it does talk to the sort of modern concept of parents. We don't talk about mums and dads, we talk about parents, and that's a recognition that both genders are really committed to this role. And thankfully, we do live in a society now where both parents can be much more involved in hands-on parenting. There's shared parental leave, and lots of parents are now kind of splitting the parenting duties and the amount of time they spend with their children, which, as a psychologist, I feel can only be beneficial for the outcomes of children.
And in a world where we're frequently told that, oh yes, give children the screen, they'll be there with their Fortnite or other sort of equivalent games and so on. Actually playing more board games with their parents was something they were really quite keen on, over a third as opposed to under a third for cooperative video games.
I know, I absolutely love this, because when we asked the children what they wanted to do, it was remarkably the really simple things. They wanted to stay up a bit later, they wanted to do baking, they wanted to have a picnic and a midnight feast and build a den, have a pillow fight. I mean, this is really encouraging news for parents, because actually what children want to do is the really straightforward things, the things that all of us can manage. And they valued that more than technology time, more than time spent watching television, which I think is something in their hearts that lots of parents already know.
Does there come a time where children effectively start comparing their parents? I mean, does that happen about 9, 10, 11 or so? And there's this sort of notion of, we get that sort of, rebellious nature coming through in adolescence, etc. Or is this a case of maybe we are seeing the signs of an intriguing aspect here? Or is it just a case of it's a natural aspect of adolescence that's going to happen, but children are going to rebel?
Well, absolutely is part of the adolescent developmental stage. Children need to move away from their parents because it's about individuating and developing your own identity. So adolescence is a very stormy period for a reason. You know, your adolescents are quite difficult to live with. So unconsciously, parents are sort of moving them out and they're sort of being drawn to their peer group. And it's a process of transition. And I think when you've done lots of really hands-on parenting and suddenly you're with this adolescent who, you know, quite clearly says, I don't want to be with you, I want to move away, it's really stressful for parents. But I want to reassure a person that's very normal. That's what adolescents are built to do, even though it's terribly trying.
Yeah. And we won't get started on terrible twos, because that's another line entirely from that point of view. Because presumably they weren't actually part of the survey because they were so annoyed and angry about the whole thing. So,
absolutely.
Any advice that you'd actually give in terms of pointers for where people should actually go to find out more about this particular Kinder survey, Elizabeth, if they're wanting to drill down into the data and find out, well, I'd like to find out how many people do want to help their parents bake and so on.
Absolutely. There's some really good top tips, advice, things that parents can do to spend time with their children on the Kinder website.
Which is all good from that point of view. And were you surprised by any of the things yourself? I mean, I think the stay up later, that's the ones that children wanted their parents to do more of. Nearly a half of those surveyed for that. Was that one which you thought, yeah, I can go with that, you know? Oh, do we have to go to bed? It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Of course you have to go to bed.
Yes, I think all children want to stay up late because it feels like a real treat and really pushing the boundaries. And actually, it's quite a quick win for parents because you can move bedtime forwards by 10 minutes and then let them stay up 10 minutes later.
You see, that's the kind of quality advice and sage advice that just marks you out, Elizabeth, as a top psychologist. Two final questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Dr. Kilby?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of more of your experience with respect to child psychology, etc.? Will you be kind enough to return?
Absolutely, I would love to.
Yay!
Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart. Hold on, instead of messing with our future.
the sky. I open up your heart, tell me, how do you feel? Listen and tell them everything, right here, right now. Alright, everybody here in the world, you are all the children. Alright, together now, unite and fight. Oh, open up your heart. No, peace, love for everyone. Oh, no, 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 no. Alright, to the four corners of the world, sing it out, sing it loud, sing it loud and loud. World, hold on.
Aspect of Siren Radio very much to the fore. World, hold on, Children of the Sky, Bob Sinclair. As we approach 14 minutes past 9 a.m. on September the 14th, 2019. Good times all round.
Hypnotized by strange delight under a lilac tree. I made wine from the lilac tree, lost my heart in its recipe, made me see what I want to see, be what I want to be. But I think more than I ought to think, do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink, because it brings me back you. Lilac wine is sweet and heady, like my love. Lilac wine, I feel.
Well, well in the season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. Clearly the whole notion of a good wine can be essential, but how do we sort out the differences? As we were talking earlier to our Newcastle correspondent Ian Lennox, that getting a down-to-earth guide to wine would be probably worth its weight in whatever. And who better to actually talk about some of the challenges with respect to wine, etc., such as reading the label, explaining the language, choosing, serving, storing wine correctly, then that awesome wine soul herself, the fantastic Philippa Carr. How are you, Philippa?
I'm really well, thank you. Good morning.
Excellent. Now, is it true, Philippa, that your passion for wine was sparked actually at university when you were running the student wine circle?
Yeah, it goes back that far, I'm afraid. It hasn't stopped since then.
English literature and wine, what's not to love about that? On a day where certainly Siren Radio's based at the University of Lincoln was celebrating graduates and so on and so forth, it's absolutely essential to happen. But this whole notion of wine and getting the right wine and so on, I mean, quite apart from the notion of, well, I'll have a dry white wine or whatever, or keeping things very simple, people get very confused about selecting the right wine, how to do it, and so on. So Philippa, what is the sort of perspective to actually work through this whole aspect in terms of how, as master of wine, you can actually say, this is what you need if you're worried about wine and saying, well, I'll have that one because it looks red?
I think you've just got to be kind to yourself and relax about it, really. Wine's to be enjoyed. It's convivial. It's life-enhancing. So don't get too hung up about it. What I've been doing with Spa is that, we acknowledge, we appreciate that if you could go into a supermarket, you just see this wall of wine, don't you? There's hundreds of different bottles. How on earth do you find something that you're going to like and you know you're going to like? So what Spa has done is put together a range which starts off with flavour. So crisp white, it does exactly what it says on the tin. And then after that, it's grape variety, which, most people recognise at least one or two grape varieties, be it Pinot Grigio or Malbec or Cabernet or something like that. And so we've got a range of those. So if you find one of those that you like, you can kind of move between them. And then after that, there's a range which is all about region and where wines come from, because I'm a great believer that wine is geography. It's all about the place. It's all about the people and the passion that they have for food and wine. And that's something that we're all getting really interested in now, drinking local, eating local, and wine is effectively really local. So if you were to see this really tight, compact range, it would help you navigate and find something that you like.
So I'm not going to go down the political route, but at the same time, it is inescapable that there are a number of people who will actually be paying attention to what is or is not happening with respect to Parliament and a certain B word. And maybe they're sort of thinking, I think I need to break out of wine. Is there a possible bottle of wine which you say, actually, if you're watching the television, if you're sorting out various other bits and pieces for autumnal nights, this would be my recommendation?
I would suggest, I'm a huge Strictly Come Dancing fan. Don't know about you, but I'm religious about it.
Philippa, I'm amazed you haven't been booked to be on the show, personally. I mean, I think it's only a matter of time. We need to work on that basis.
Oh, I'm really... Actually, no, I'm very much up for that. But it's a kind of group activity. You sit round with your friends and family. And I'm very conscious that the new judge, Motsi, is from South Africa. So I would say that if you're watching Strictly Come Dancing, you should raise a glass to Motsi and her sister, Oti. Now she's got a new partner, to, really enjoy together a glass of Spa's gold medal winning Chenin Blanc. Now, this is breaking news. We have just heard that we have won a gold medal for our £6.50 Chenin Blanc from South Africa.
Congratulations. Absolutely. Well done. A hearty congratulations. Thanks. On that basis. It's great. Even more wonderful news from that point of view. So that'd be the one you'd actually go for, which is fantastic. And it's slightly off topic, but who do you think is going to win this year? Who would you actually turn around and say, yes, that would be my choice? Or is it a case of it's too soon to say, I need to serve the wine correctly and actually settle myself down before I can actually really make an answer to that one?
I think I'm going to enjoy the journey, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Very
Saturday
good.
After Saturday, yeah.
You see, personally, I'd always like to open a bottle of wine whilst actually scrutinising mastersofwine.org, because I think it's well put together on that sort of basis. And as a master of wine, mistress of wine, technically, Philippa, you know, we would sort of work through on that basis. It's very good.
No, I'm a master of wine.
A master of wine, that's fine. Yeah. Specifying the whole thing through, and why not? Is there anywhere else on the web that you'd recommend people should go to find out further information about what we've been chatting about this morning, Philippa?
Well, you can go to the spa website, or you could also just pop into a local store, because spa has started up a group of really enthusiastic spa retailers, and it's called the Wine Club, really simple. And we've got a member in Sleaford in Lincolnshire. Also, I don't know if you reach that far, West Malling in Kent as well. And they are so enthusiastic, and they are bursting with pride about their wines, about their stores. And if you went in and chatted to them, I'm sure you would have lots of information.
Well, Dina, we couldn't wish for a better sort of precursor to our regular food critic, William Sitwell, who's joining us in a few moments, all being well. It's been awesome, Philippa. Two final questions for your good self. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for you?
I have had an awesome time. Thank you very much, Alex.
The next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return?
Oh, I'd love to.
Yay.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk more strictly.
I think you could actually be officially nominated as Siren Radio's official Strictly correspondent and wine expert. It's fantastic.
Oh,
Master of Wine, Philippa Carr. Well, I mean, we should talk English literature as well, which is all great stuff. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you.
From our Master of Wine, Philippa Carr, we move on to something a little bit more serious in many ways, which is a preconception that effectively relates to cardiac treatment and so on and so forth. There's still a knowledge gap, actually, when it comes to heart health for women specifically, with over 1 in 10 women believing heart disease or heart attacks are just a problem for men. And now to hopefully address this aspect and shed some light on this situation in which maybe 15% of women who've experienced chest pains have not actually sought advice from a doctor, we're delighted to welcome HealthSpan Medical Director, Dr. Sarah Brewer. Sarah, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you very much.
Good, excellent. Now, Sarah, this was very surprising research in essence, because I suppose there has been that line that it's mostly been a masculine male thing, that effectively if you're going to keel over and have cardio problems, it's going to be a man as opposed to a woman. So we need to clearly address this.
Absolutely, and the HealthSpan survey found that in your area, in Lincolnshire, 17% of women who'd experienced chest pains hadn't actually sought advice from a doctor. and that is worrying. Also, another problem is that women don't always recognise that they might not get the typical symptoms of a heart attack. So, you know, the Hollywood heart attack you see in films, somebody getting crushing chest pain and grasping their chest, it might not happen for women. We experience pain in a different way, and sometimes the actual cause of our heart attack is different from that in men.
And again, part of that, I mean, as I say, we look around the University of Lincoln campus, home of Siren Radio, and we see that there are lots sort of defibrillator units and sort of people and first aiders who are tested from that point of view. But as you just said, that sort of notion of it's just a chest pain, etc., people will probably sort of, you know, put it off from that point of view. And again, just looking at some of the figures that we've actually got here, that 41%, so nearly half of women surveyed, had no idea what their blood pressure and cholesterol levels were. That's, again, worrying news, really, because you could literally be a ticking time bomb, basically.
Yeah, and those are both factors that don't actually have symptoms. So you could have a very high blood pressure and not know it, very high cholesterol and not know it. So it's a good idea, if you don't know what your figures are, to have them checked. Go along and see your doctor.
Now, clearly that's the key thing that we're looking for from that point of view. But what about that line that 58% saying that it's not an important or necessary, quarter believed it must just be a pull muscle. Would you actually counsel in many ways, Sarah, that you've got to see your doctor just to check that everything is okay, just to make sure that, you know, prevention is better than cure?
Absolutely. Any persistent pain anywhere in the body, but particularly in the chest, which isn't going away, keeps coming back, any niggling problems, but it might not just be a pain. You might actually get pain in the back, for example. You might be feeling lightheaded. You might feel a bit dizzy. Sometimes you get a feeling of impending doom, but and sometimes you just don't know that you've had a heart attack. And there's significant numbers of women now who are being seen, having eventually been diagnosed with a heart attack, who show signs on their ECG, their heart tracing, that they've actually previously had a heart attack and hadn't realised it.
Now, we've had Blood Pressure Awareness Week. We're heading towards Cholesterol Month, etc. Do those things help, Sarah? I mean, obviously, part and parcel of the reason for this interview is to raise awareness of the challenge and so on. And is it a case of, I mean, you might say, take a look at the current situation in global geopolitics, and is it any wonder I've got a heart challenge from that point of view? But, you know, in terms of that, is it a case of we just need to be aware of these things and take action where appropriate?
It is, and women also need to think about themselves a bit more. I think it's very easy when you're juggling a job, family, keeping the home going, planning meals, it's very easy to put yourself last, and you know, it's never convenient to have a heart attack, and it's never convenient to have heart pain, so you know, you tend to put things off sometimes until it's too late. So you know, just with Healthspan are trying to raise awareness of the fact that, you know, health is precious, and women need to be aware that they might not get the typical symptoms that they might think of as being a heart attack.
And as we said, back pain, feeling sick or feeling lightheaded are all signals, possible signals of heart attack, as well as, of course, profuse and unexplained sweating can also be a possible symptom. So challenges all around. Where would you suggest people should go to, Sarah, to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today and sort of look at online and so on?
Well, to go online and just to find information about heart and health and diet, etc., you can Google Healthspan Heart Health. You can obviously visit nhs.uk. You can go and see your doctor if you're concerned about your own symptoms. But there's lots of information online, so just make sure that you're getting it from a credible source.
Well, Sarah, I was just going to sort of say, yeah, there is an awful lot of information online, and sometimes you just need to sift through the untruths that are actually there. So let's focus on that. Dr. Sarah Brewer, Healthspan Medical Director, many thanks indeed, and hopefully stay fit, stay healthy, and we will doubtless speak again. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Survey is mapping out your life. small print is what we agree. Sign your name before we teach you how to read. This is the land of do what you're told. Smile a little wider as you're waiting to be sold. This is the land of do what you're told. I'm a celebrity, let me in here. One last jump from the end of the pier. We breached the wall, but I was too tired to run. My get up and go got up and now it's gone. Look at the small print, it's what we agree. Sign your name before we teach you how to read. This is the land of do what you're told. The land of the free, if you don't leave the fold. Smile a little wider as you're so, this is the land of do what you're told. This is the land of do what you're told. With a little lip service to break in the mold. Smile a little wider as you're waiting to be sold. This is the land. Going on strike for 12%. We're not downhearted yet. They're filming it all for a reality show, so 12% we'll get. This is the land. We're going on strike for 12%. We're not downhearted yet. This is the land. They're filming it all for a reality show, so 12% we'll get. This is the land. We're going on strike for 12%. We're not downhearted yet. This is the land. We're filming it all for a reality show, so 12% we'll get. This is the land. We're going on strike for 12%. We're not downhearted yet. This is the land. We're filming it all for a reality show, so 12% we'll get. We're going on strike for 12%. We're not downhearted yet. They're filming it all for a reality show, so 12% we'll get.
Oh, well. Chumbawamba, the land of do what you're told. Sadly, William Sidwell, unable to connect with him, so we might have to miss him out this time. However, Dr. Ian Pearson, Bionics and so on, will be with us very shortly. You may recall, if you've been with us at the start of the show, that we were talking about the notion of enhancing, whether you'd actually go for high-tech body upgrades, whether you'd change from that point of view, how far you'd actually go, how far you'd be prepared to go. A study commissioned by Virgin Media suggests that actually some of these answers are quite surprising. So we'll talk with futurologist Dr. Ian Pearson about that, all after Big Audio Dynamite.
Why don't you play the tune? I don't like music.
Sanity, bohemian style. Ritual life is relative. jerk's not living right in her van. Have it taken like a calling card, a 6-inch line friend. All Philly falls, mumbles something about the past. Best sex I've ever seen, as if each moment was a loss. Drops of blood, color side, funeral for his bride. But it's him who's really dead, gets to take the funeral ride.
Scratch my head and wonder why. Time slides into time across an national dateline. Scientist eats bubblegum, Hall of Fame baseball, senators a hoodlum, big chiefs in a hall. Placed upon the screen instead, she's my flame, too hot to hold. Had to settle for a cold. Burglars, Greek god, gold discovery. Dombus, type what, slow recovery. Extra flamethrower, iron bar and gun. Betting shop, new owner, a walk in the sun. Back, could the beat for soundtrack? King of brains, queen of the sack. Executives have heart attack. It's a song called celluloid. The money makers would avoid. Sometimes notions get reversed. Center of the universe. Ritual ideas, relativity.
And if you actually want to work on the process of E equals MC squared, as Albert Einstein did, of course, maybe you would consider an enhancement. Maybe that is the way forward. But with more than one in four people apparently willing to tamper with their brain to add new functions to daily life, clearly strange things are happening as we approach the third decade of the 21st century. So clearly, to address this, we turn to a futurologist, and not just any futurologist, the awesome futurologist, Dr. Ian Pearson. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. So this study, which, as we said, commissioned by Virgin Media, and it's in support of the latest near-future TV drama, The Feed, talks about the whole feelings of the nation towards a cyborg future. I recall Kevin Warwick at the University of Reading, I believe, always talking in the latter part of the 20th century about wanting to be human 2.0, and indeed I think Kevin did actually have a microchip implanted to actually help him do some interesting experiments and so on. The general line, it has to be said so far, Ian, is a lot of people are a little bit concerned about this and don't share the large number of people here who, in the case of the East Midlands, one in five of those who said they'd be willing to tamper with their brain to add new functions to daily life. But are cybernetic organisms literally what's going to be in fashion and essential as we head through the 21st century?
Well, it's certainly coming, and Kevin Warwick was one of the first people to have a chip implanted in his wrist. It's called a radio frequency identity chip, if anyone's interested. And a lot of people now are getting these implanted in their skin so that they can pay a bar bill just by waving their hand over a scanner. And it's basically the same sort of device that you have inside a lot of your credit cards or even mobile phones these days. So that kind of technology is easy to live with, and you can easily understand why people might want it. Having much much deeper implants, you know, getting your arm chopped off and replaced with cybernetic arms or something. There are people who want to do that, but they are in the minority. And, you know, maybe one in five people want to go down this route, but that means that four in five don't really. The problem is, I think, that if some people go down this road and get massive implants and get massively improved intelligence and improved physical strength and so on, the rest of us might feel obliged to compete with that by also getting those implants ourselves. And that's really where the problem is. A lot of people would feel forced to go down this path that don't want to because some other people are going down it voluntarily. And we need to have a lot of discussion, really, as a society, whether we want to go down this road and how far down that road we want to go and put some sensible limitations so that people don't get a big advantage over their neighbours, which forces their neighbours to go down and do things they don't want. So I don't really have much problems with it in principle, but we need to do it in a democratic way and decide, you know, as a society, how much of this we really want to permit and what should be allowed and what shouldn't.
I hope you're not suggesting a referendum on it, Ian, otherwise the whole world will collapse on that basis. Cause,
I wouldn't dare.
No, exactly. I mean, dreadful on that side of things. But this is something which certainly up until relatively recently, I suppose, certainly in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, was very much the stuff of speculative fiction, Martin Cajun, of course, the concept of cyborg, Terminator. We kind of have an image through popular cultural images of science fiction in terms of what this sort of thing applies. But in reality, of course, there are lots of changes and differences with that. And I think you've raised a really interesting point in terms of, is it going to be a case of cybernetically keeping up with your Joneses or your neighbours and so on, and saying, well, if so, and obviously from a competitive children point of view, you know, if one child has actually got an enhancement, then another one needs to do, etc., etc. We've seen in athletics, for instance, the challenges with respect to, obviously, the sort of blade runners in the Olympics and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it isn't all competitive stuff. A lot of the things that people want are things like perfect eyesight. You know, we'd all like that. I mean, I wear glasses. It'd be quite nice if I didn't have to. I don't really want to get laser surgery and stuff, but it'd be quite nice if there was an easy route of getting perfect eyesight. And another superpower that people want to have is the power to be able to heal themselves straight away and have enhanced physical strength. And I can imagine a lot of people who are particularly old people, you know, my parents are in the late 80s, you know, they would love to have the physical strength back again that they had 30, 40 years ago. So I think a lot of these things are not competitive, but they're just things that would improve our quality of life. And those are the things we should separate out and say, these are great, let's have that. Let's have the supervision with the active contact lenses. Let's have the improved memory and maybe a little bit better intelligence. But we have to make sure that it's done in a fair way that doesn't force people to go down the wrong paths. But I think there are a lot of the technologies coming along which can be done quite safely, and they're actually quite near term. Things like having supervision where you can zoom in on something or record everything that you look at, it really isn't as far away as you might imagine. We should be able to do that within 10 years using active contact lenses, which produce images straight onto your retina. And, of course, that comes free with the ability to do augmented reality or virtual reality or to have any displaying anything you like and enhance everything. You'd be able to see in infrared and ultraviolet. These kind of skills would add a lot of value to life without producing necessarily a competitive advantage that makes other people feel inferior. So I think we should look forward to those sorts of things and maybe enable those and allow those to come along as fast as possible and make them as cheap as possible so that everybody can get it. And maybe things where it's, giving you an extra 3 points on your IQ, that might give you such a competitive advantage. So three digits extra on your IQ, that you might be able to take over the world with such an advantage. We really need to be cautious about going down that path. But it's possible in principle in the 2040s to connect your brain so well to the cloud that you could actually give massive increases to your intelligence and give you access to all of human knowledge. We need to be quite careful going down that route. But sports actually are a very good way of demonstrating how you do that. Sports bodies have all got regulations in which prohibit you from going too far and getting too much advantage. Even in things like tennis, you know, you're limited to what you can make the rackets with, and the balls have to be made in a particular way, and you're not allowed to use supervision and all of these sorts of stuff to give you a big advantage in that sport. And, you know, Formula One and all the other sports you can think of have all got very strong regulations about what you should be able to do and what you shouldn't be able to do, and that actually sets a very good example for how we should do this for the rest of these modifications.
Many writers have actually said that when we start talking about the singularity and that whole notion of heading all towards one uni-mind and line from that point of view, it's always like 15, 20 years in the future, or 10, 15 years in the future, there's always that kind of line. We're getting close to it, we're approximating it, we have discussions like this, we say, oh, what's going to happen, this, etc. Is it something that we're kind of now reaching the stage where, yes, it, from an ethical point of view, as we've addressed, you need to address that, and also from a pharmaceutical point of view, a biotechnology point of view, that these are areas that, yes, there are opportunities, but one needs to be, shall we say, cautious in terms of how they're applied?
Yeah, what's interesting for me is I've been tracking this stuff since 1991, and way back then I invented the active contact lens. It's actually how I got into this business. And the active contact lens was prototyped by Google in 2005, and then somebody else prototyped it a few years ago with a slightly different modification, and it's appeared again this year. So it's coming very close to reality. So within the next 10 years, I'd expect you to be able to buy these sorts of things. A lot of the smart drugs that we were talking about 30 years ago, they now exist. You can take these medications which improve your IQ or your memory for a few hours when it really matters. In a decade or two time, they might be quite safe and might be quite routinely used for people that are doing difficult jobs. Other things on this, where you've got the improving intelligence and so on, those are still a few decades away, and maybe they fall in the category of, you know, they're always sort of 15, 20 years in the future. But, you know, they've been consistently expected in the 2040s since I started doing this job, really. So we are getting closer. We're getting to the point where we can make real upgrades to the body. We even have things like thought recognition now. It's possible to dictate speech just by thinking about the words, and the computer can work out what you're thinking of. You can even put images on a TV screen just by thinking about the image. So we're getting really quite advanced technology in the laboratory already, and it only takes 15, 20 years to get from the laboratory to the high street. So these are not things which are very far away. We will have supermen running around in a few decades.
But will they wear their underpants outside or inside the trousers? I don't know. We don't even go there.
Well, fashions
they do change, absolutely. And number 13 in the top 20 cyborg enhancements, the ability to fly, I must admit, is the one that I thought that's probably the furthest away from what we've actually seen. But still.
We don't know how to do that one.
No, we just hold that. Ian, it's been fascinating sharing some thoughts with yourself.
Yeah,
and also a little bit frightening as well, but that's what we like. It's all good. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us using the traditional method invented by Marconi, of course, and various other folks across the radio airwaves? Has it been okay for yourself?
It has indeed.
In which case, perhaps we can connect with you again in the very near future and keep us appraised of how technology is changing and how, yes, changing times, changing worlds. Any thoughts on actually getting some kind of enhancements to enhance the capabilities and IQs of our political leaders would be welcome, Ian. So maybe you need to think on that from the futurologica. No names, but I think we know of which we speak, basically.
I think we do.
Indeed.
Smoking a lot of cigarettes lately, but inside it's just a little baby. Oh, it's okay to say you got a weak spot. You don't always have to be on top. Better to be hated than loved, loved, loved for what you're not. You're vulnerable.
Yes, what?
drumbeat drop. Guess what?
Gone and returned to the domain of scary diseases which we once used to heard of or hear about back in the early part of this decade. But no, it's actually come back to haunt us in all so many tragic ways. And to talk about the ways in which we can hopefully deal with this or begin to address with this dreadful virus with its high fatality rate and so on, first discovered, of course, in Africa in 1976, we're delighted to welcome one of the few British doctors to have actually seen the effects of Ebola firsthand, Dr. Aaron Gosch. Good morning, Dr. Gosch. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm very well. Thank you.
Now, I think if memory serves, we were talking about a variety of nasty things that the Ebola virus actually does. And it sort of was one of those things where at the time people were saying, you know, it's face-eating, it impacts on so many things, etc. Just talk to us about how this isn't like the flu. This is a problem. What exactly is Ebola?
So Ebola is a viral disease, and it's a highly contagious condition that originates from sub-Saharan Africa. And the reason why it's so devastating is that it's very, very contagious, and its symptoms are very similar to other conditions. So many people who present initially with Ebola have fever, headaches, fatigue, sore throat, and that can be conditions similar to flu viruses, similar to malaria, similar to dengue fever. So it's very difficult to pick up. But the problem is, if you don't pick it up, the devastation this condition has is it has a fatality rate of up to 90%.
Which is one of the reasons why the WHO, the World Health Organization, defined it as the largest, most complex and most severe epidemic we've ever seen in 2014. I mean, it's very much a case of the end times. I mean, biologically, viruses are tricky, pesky fellows. I mean, we can kind of, to a certain extent, sort out bacteria, but viruses have this constant way of actually using life forms as vectors and then effectively emerging, as you said, after fairly substantial incubation periods.
Absolutely. So the problem with viruses is that to actually kill them often means destroying our own cells. And this particular virus, a filovirus, actually uses our own cells to replicate. And therefore, to try and kill it often means devastating therapies like immunotherapy or a chemotherapy. And these, as you know, are very difficult to get, especially out in Africa. So we haven't yet got a cure. We are testing some drugs. We haven't yet got even a set treatment plan. We know really conservative plans, such as making sure people are well hydrated, making sure there's much sort of more awareness and education. That's really our best bet with this virus.
Now, as with all kinds of issues relating to matters medical and life and death in particular, there's great drama in terms of that. And it's interesting to find that the Hot Zone, National Geographic's new drama series, launches currently in terms of how things are operating, starring Juliana Margulies. Does that actually help raise the public awareness, or does it actually cause people to be more frightened? And it's a case of, oh, anthrax, Ebola, we're all going to die.
I actually think it really helps, because what we're trying to do is create an awareness of a condition and a disease that we don't really think will ever affect us. And what this show actually shows is that if it does come to our shores, it will really affect us, because we haven't, well, especially as the show shows, is that we haven't yet got plans in place to control this disease. And we really need to get more emphasis on treatments. We need to get more emphasis on education. Really, we fear often what's away from us, and what we don't know, we fear it because we haven't really done that research. And what this brilliantly shows today when we have a look at this is that we see that all it takes is a little bit of education, it takes a little bit of research, a little bit of money, and actually we can change the way that we can treat disease throughout the whole of the world.
It's interesting when you make lines and statements such as making plans. It seems the current government have lots of other things they're not making plans for either, but best not go there.
That's
a different line entirely. In terms of symptoms about this, I mean, I was astounded to find that symptoms usually appear up to nearly 2 weeks, 8 to 10 days after exposure to the virus. And again, an incubation period can span up to 3 weeks, up to 21 days. So again, it's really tricky to kind of obviously maintain this whole system, really, isn't it?
Yeah, when I was working in Ghana, it was difficult to really pick up patients because obviously the younger patients may show symptoms much sooner and fit, healthy adults may show them much later. And anywhere actually between 2 and 21 days could those symptoms present. And I think when you watch the show tonight, you'll see that patients actually can go through a period of being very, very well, can pass it on to lots of other people. So when you are feeling maybe just a bit feverish and a bit unwell, especially in those sort of countries, you do just shake them off. You think that's just another virus, that's just another illness. And really, you'll see that when it comes over to the U.S., the initial people that get in contact here, they do exactly the same thing. They're thinking, oh, I won't take a day off work. Why would I take a day off just for a bit of a cough and a cold? But actually, they've got the first signs and symptoms of Ebola, which is a deadly virus. And the first thing you need to do is actually quarantine these people and make sure they can't spread it.
And who's playing Dr. Aaron Ghosh in the series?
I'll have to ask the National Geographic if they'll do that show.
It needs to be that. I mean, George Clooney probably a bit too old these days, a bit too chronologically gifted, although maybe with computer regeneration, a young George Clooney could actually slot into place, perhaps? Just a thought
there. I would love to be on par with the Colonel, Colonel Jacks, who's done this. And certainly Dr. Wade, who you see in the show, he actually goes faced forward into Ebola. You know, he discovers a condition in 1976 which is devastating people. He has no idea how it's transmitted. He has no idea what the actual virus is. And rather than what most of us would do, would probably run away and care about ourselves, he goes face forward into that to try and discover this. And I think, you know, they're the real heroes here.
I can see just a matter of time before it's Dr. Aaron Ghosh at large as a sort of Marcus Welby MD character for the 21st century. It'll happen from that point of view. Meanwhile, Aaron, where can people go to find out more details about what we've been talking about today in terms of the Ebola virus? Is there a best place you'd suggest they should actually check out?
The NHS has a great link now for the Ebola virus disease, and it's well worth looking at that. Also, the World Health Organization have an incredibly good policy. For anyone who's going to be working out in Africa, then it's certainly important that you look at that, because the biggest risk actually in the UK would be people who go out and work in AIDS centres out there who could potentially get in contact with the virus. But again, tonight's show at 9 o'clock is a really, really good show on anyone who's interested in what Ebola is and actually how that could be devastating for us here in the West.
Yeah, as I say, just when you thought it was safe to actually sort of say, oh, we don't have to worry about prorogating Parliament, etc., it's already happened. We've got Ebola around the corner as well. It's not good. But anyway, Dr. Aaron Ghosh, at least we've raised a few sort of key points today. Many thanks to these. Two final questions for you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been good for you, sir?
It's been wonderful. Thank you very much.
In which case, can we maybe prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future and again talk about why you are one of Britain's top 250 doctors, and we'll continue to be, I'd say top 50 now, actually. I think it's notched up.
Happy to talk about myself whenever you want.
Dr. Aaron Ghosh, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thanks, Neil. Bye.
And that's it. We're pretty much out of here. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Elizabeth Kilby, Philippa Carr, Dr. Sarah Brewer, Professor June Andrews, Dr. Ian Pearson, Dr. Aaron Ghosh, and you, dear listener, for being part of the whole package or for however long you've been part of Siren Radio. Don't forget this evening, 7 o'clock, Standard Country Vision, time for the news. Happy trails, happy Thursday.
This is Siren Radio, Lincoln.